Welcome to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. Today we're pleased to be talking with artist and author Teresa Jordan and with musician, composer, and writer Hal Cannon. And we're pleased to welcome them in from Portland, Oregon. We're going to be putting this...
Recording in progress.
There we go. Trying to start the recording here because we're going to have this on YouTube a little bit later in the day. We're talking with Teresa Jordan and Hal Cannon, our friends. Of course, a while back they moved from Virgin, Utah to Portland, Oregon. They live in a floating home on the Willamette River. And Hal continues to write to make music, and Teresa's working as a Buddhist chaplain at a large inner-city hospital. We're going to hear music from Hal Cannon's two recent albums and talk with Teresa Jordan about her short film "Birds of Paradise," "Birds of Praise," among other things. Teresa Jordan, Hal Cannon, thanks for joining us.
Good to be here.
Good to be here. We miss Utah.
Yeah, we miss having you here. So for those who don't know you, let me just read a brief bio for each of you. Teresa Jordan's an artist and author who grew up in a house full of books on an isolated ranch in Wyoming. Her books include Cowboys, Women of the American West, The Ranch Memoir, Riding the White Horse Home, and The Year of Living Virtuously. After more than 35 years of writing for publication and teaching creative nonfiction, Teresa retired, in quotes, from writing in 2016 to concentrate on visual art and mindfulness practice. We'll want to talk about that. Hal Cannon is a musician, composer, and writer who spent much of his life as a folklorist and radio producer. As the founding director of the Western Folklife Center and National Cowboy Poetry Gathering in Elko, Nevada, he's published dozens of books and recordings on the folk arts of the West. His latest albums are Cowboy Sutra and with Three Hat Trio, Come Morning. So it's great to have you with us. Let me just tell people how this came about. We recently did an event, UPR did, in Springdale. And as a part of that event, Zion Canyon Mesa, I thought, well, I'll interview my old friends, Hal Cannon and Teresa Jordan. I'll just go to their house in Virgin. Or they can come to Zion Canyon Mesa. So I emailed you guys, and Teresa, you replied, well, we've moved to Portland. So I guess that's a starting point. I'll start with Teresa on this one. What precipitated this move?
You know, it really was this change of focus in my life from writing and painting, which was independent. I was freelance always, to working in hospitals. And I had done my internships in big city hospitals, one at University of Colorado Hospital in Aurora outside Denver, and the other at a big hospital here in Portland. I had lived in Portland for several years when Hal and I got together. And we decided to go with where Hal had a paying job, had a salaried job, and went to Utah, which was just such rich and wonderful years for us. But with this, I was interested in working in a big city hospital. We've always kept very close connections to Portland. And when I did my internship, we had traded houses with friends who live on a floating home here in this same moorage. And it sort of ruined us. Living on the river is really lovely. So Hal was willing to do that, and we just decided to make a big change and downsize our life considerably.
So Hal, that's a big change. You said yes. How's it been?
Me?
Yes.
Oh, it's good. You know, I get up early with Teresa when she goes to work and make breakfast and brew up some brew, and then I make dinner, and those are my obligations. I take the dogs out for walks, our dog out for walks. You know, I haven't been particularly productive lately, but I did put these two albums together, and that's sort of been my big accomplishment. That was, you know, it's a lot of people don't realize what goes into putting an album together, I don't think. Mm-hmm. It's a long and involved, and you know, it's like writing a book. It takes a lot of thought, maybe overthought, unfortunately, but that's what I've been doing.
We'll dive in. Yeah, go ahead. What's that?
I haven't. I don't really play much music with other musicians up here. We go to hear a lot of music at shows. There's a lot of great music in town.
You go and consume music at this point.
Yeah.
Like what? What do you go to?
Well, we went and saw Gillian Welch and David Rawlins last week, and went and saw Calexico, and we had a cowboy singer friend of ours do a house concert up here named Mike Beck. Our dear friends Molly O'Brien and Rich Moore came and stayed with us, and they did a concert here.
Nick Cave.
Oh, Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds, we went to see him. We go to classical music, jazz. There's a good jazz club not too far from here we go to called the 1905. There's just tons of music. I'm going to go hear some unknown group tonight, I think, up on at a closed down tavern that hosts music on Wednesday nights.
Yeah, that sounds like an eclectic, like, of course, you probably always had eclectic tastes, right?
I always have, yeah.
So I guess first to Teresa and then to Hal. This has been a, I guess, a collaborative partnership over the many years. You've supported each other. Tell me a little bit about that. As evidenced, all right, Teresa, you wanted to move back to Portland, and Hal supported you there. But maybe talk about the artistic support.
You know, we've always been really good readers of each other's work. We came together. We first met at a conference in Sun Valley, Idaho, called Inventing the West. And it brought together, we were young, and it was a time of real excitement around pretty much all the ways we were looking at the West, whether I came from history and had just published this book of oral history on women who worked on ranches and on rodeo. Hal came from folklore, and he was the state folklorist of Utah. And there were all sorts of writers, lawyers, artists, musicians who were looking at the West and really looking at an expanded vision of the West that included the voices of indigenous people through their viewpoint rather than as seen by white historians. And that of you know, the voices of women, just lots of voices that really hadn't been heard in the West before. It was just a very exciting time. We met each other at that time. We met tons of people who ended up being important in our lives over a long period of time. Alvin Josephy, Bill Kittredge, Onyx Smith, Vine Deloria, all sorts of Scott Momaday. And we connected there. We were on a panel together, went out to dinner. Hal was married. I was with somebody. We just sort of noticed each other and the affinities between our work. Hal was working with cowboys. I come from ranching culture. Didn't see each other for 10 years and then we got married.
I was divorced by then.
Okay. This wasn't a polygamous kind of a thing. Okay. So it's been a wonderful partnership. You've both done your own thing, right? But Teresa, I want to start with you. I was very interested to Hal sent me a link to Birds of Praise. You can find it on your website as well, right?
That's
TeresaJordan.com.
right.
This kind of gives a little bit of explanation for your transition from writing to mindfulness and meditation and to the visual arts, right? Tell me a little bit about this. You begin by saying that you were in the habit of doing a painting a day, I guess, of nature around you, and then the pandemic happened. What happened then?
Well, you know, the pandemic, I think, was just a profound experience for people everywhere, literally all over the world. And it just, it, lockdown was, it, you know, do you remember? We thought it would be 2 weeks. And of course, it was an extended amount of time. Our daughter and her family came and lived with us, our two young grandkids. Junie was, what, two at that point, and PJ was
Six.
six or seven. And so we had y young kids and in the house, and PJ was trying to do school online, and he's a very brilliant, involved, active child who did not do well with online schooling. So we were, you know, we were just really functioning as a family, and it was a very rich time for us as a family. but it upended every, pretty much all of our lives. And I'm speaking there, not just our family, but all of us. Our lives changed radically at that time. And I had had this painting practice. Every day I would do a painting, and that just really stopped with that. And it took a while before I found time again to start doing that. And then I did start painting the birds. We lived in this beautiful old pioneer pecan orchard in Virgin, Utah, on the edge of the Zion National Park. And we had a lot of ravens in our orchard, and we're always so amused by them. They're such great, quirky birds. And so I started painting them, and I just thought, I've always loved wordplay, and I thought, oh, this is so interesting, corvids in a time of COVID. And so I thought, well, I'll do a series of 19 paintings. It was sort of a joke. And then things got serious very fast. We lost a dear friend, one of the first people to die of COVID in Utah, Bob Garf. And then other people we knew were really seriously sick. And it just, anyway, I just kept painting these birds. And I've had it at that point, I'd had a Buddhist practice for well over 10 years. There really wasn't a Buddhist community in rural Utah. And a lot of things came online with the pandemic. That was, for me, a silver lining that just, I've always been, I'm a lifelong student in all sorts of training and education, and also communities of practice. And I started practicing with the New York Zen Center in New York. And it's the New York Zen Center for Contemplative Care, and they're really leaders in chaplaincy and in bringing contemplative care into healthcare. I had had no knowledge of this or interest in this, but I just really sort of stumbled into it. And I think in the pandemic, so many of us wanted to be able to do something helpful in this time of real need. So I just, to my great surprise, I would be the person in high school who was voted, least likely to be involved in spiritual care. I was a real cowgirl, and I just that it. So, but it's been a very rich expansion and exploration. I'm very, very grateful for it.
Yeah, kind of a surprising to you direction, I guess, right? Yeah,
Yes,
yeah.
yes.
It's interesting in this short film, Birds of Praise. Again, you can find it at teresajordan.com. You do some prayers, and you mention in the film there prayers can be of all kinds, right?
Yeah.
Tell me about these prayers.
Well, I did not grow up in a religious family, and in fact, there'd been quite a bit of religious trauma, particularly for my dad. So he was he was very anti-religious. And I did go to church on the occasion that we would spend a weekend in town with my grandmother, and I went to the Episcopalian church, but I didn't have a prayer practice. But in part of my training, my very initial training, we had a wonderful theologian and poet, Padraic O'Tuama from Ireland, come and talk to us. And he talked about the collect form of prayer, which is a very ancient form that's very familiar. The Lord's Prayer is a collect form. You address who you're saying your prayer to, you say something about why you're saying it, you make your ask. And Padraic reminded us that the prayer comes from that word, pray, to ask, and that a prayer practice, and whether it is in a traditional religious form or a more secular form, it gets you, it makes you very intimate with what you care about most. And so I started experimenting with this form, and I was just very involved at this point with the lives of birds. I was painting a bird every day. I was watching the birds in our world. I was watching wildlife videos, really studying birds in every way I could. And so I started addressing these prayers to the birds. And birds, of course, have always been seen as carriers between Earth and the celestial world.
Yeah.
So it was an intimate and surprising practice for me.
this title, Birds of Praise, right there, kind of fits in there.
And
you end the.
that was actually a term of Patrick's that he uses for the
Oh, I
Amen.
see.
And he calls the Amen the bird of praise. And I
Oh, I
love
see.
that.
Yeah. Very fitting at the end, some of Hal's music in this film. Beautiful piece of music. I think people will be familiar with. I've forgotten the title, but I was familiar
it's
with it.
It's called Silver Dove.
Silver Dove. Yes. Very, very fitting. Yeah. Well, let's do take our first break. We're talking with Teresa Jordan and Hal Cannon, longtime residents of Utah, a virgin in the entrance to Zion National Park. They've now moved to Portland, Oregon. They're living on a floating home in the Willamette River. And Hal's making music. Teresa's working as a Buddhist chaplain at an inner city hospital there. When we come back, we'll learn about one of Hal Cannon's recent albums. He has two. We'll talk about Cowboy Sutra. And later in the hour, we'll talk about his album with Three Hat Trio, Come Morning. More following this break. You're listening to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. We have about 8 minutes left in this conversation. Very pleased to have with us artist and author and chaplain Teresa Jordan and musician, composer, and writer Hal Cannon. They moved from a while back from Virgin, Utah to Portland, Oregon. They're living on a floating home in the Willamette River. Hal's making music. Teresa's working as a Buddhist chaplain at a inner city hospital there in Portland. So Hal Cannon, I wanted to talk about your other album. You have a couple of albums out. This one with Three Hat Trio, and it's called Come Morning. First of all, remind us, who is Three Hat Trio?
Well, Three Hat Trio is three individuals who got together when the violinist was 16 years old, Eli Rankle, and a bass player who came from Caribbean music in Florida, and me playing banjo and folk music, and we all lived close to each other, and somehow we got together and to jam, and we found that there was some kind of magical connection between us, and we never forgot that. And 7 albums later and a lot of touring in Europe, and we're still thinking about music. We got together not too long ago at the Zion Mesa, where you were up at the artist retreat, and they gave us the place for the weekend, and we just sat down and recorded constantly and put together these impromptu pieces of instrumental music and called it Come Morning. Here's the album cover.
Yeah, beautiful, beautiful. By the way, at that event, Greg Istock played music for us for that event.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, great.
Yeah, Greg's truly a brilliant musician.
He's a painter also. The cover of Come Morning.
Oh, wonderful. He did the painting. I didn't know that. Yeah. Yeah.
He's
yeah.
A wonderful painter.
Yeah.
And a brilliant musician. And, you know, I really miss working with Greg. We were sort of musical partners for many years, and so you know, we talk and we're still tied together, and we want to cook up projects, but you know, we don't have that daily practice like we used to.
Yeah. So understand that this particular album was recorded at the Mesa, right?
Yeah. Most of it.
And they invite you to explore musical impressions of morning in the Utah desert. So that's kind of the theme of these instrumental music, right? So let's hear just a little bit of, this is Come Dawn from Come Morning.
Okay.
So this is Three Hat Trio. Thank you. Just a portion of Come Dawn from Come Morning, the latest from Three Hat Trio. So Hal Cannon, we're hearing violin there, banjo and bass, is it? Those are the instruments?
Yeah. That's
all. Beautiful, evocation of the dawn in the desert there. You can find that at halcannon.com as well?
You can find it there or on any of your, favorite streaming services. Teresa and I listened to that album a lot more than any other. It's just great background music for a drive or making dinner or, I don't know what it is about that, but it's very easy, going and, I don't know. It's getting really nice reviews, mostly in Europe. Over our 10 years of trying to get out there and do this music very actively, the only place we really got any success was close to home or in Europe.
Close to home or Europe?
But all of our reviews are coming from Netherlands, Germany, England, Scotland, Wales, those places where we still have a very devoted fan base.
Why do you think that is, close to home or Europe?
I just figure that everyone else has bad taste.
Yeah, could be. Could be. We'll work on that theory.
I don't know.
Yeah. Teresa Jordan, I want to turn to you at just a few minutes left in the program, but wanted to notice on your website, teresajordan.com, this seems to fit in with some of the themes that we've been talking about. You have a section on here on kintsugi. Am I pronouncing that right? This, I think people are familiar with this. You take broken pottery, you mend it. It's got kind of golden seams, and it's the idea is it's better than before, stronger than before, even though broken.
Yes, it's a Japanese form of mending, a traditional form of mending, and that the broken vessel in Western repair, that the idea is to make the repair invisible, so that, for instance, a Metropolitan Museum of Art would take an Egyptian bowl that from 5,000 years ago, that it was broken, repair it in such a way that it looks like it just came out of the artisan's shop. But in kintsugi, the idea was to allow the scars, allow the seams, the mending to be visible. And so that you create something that is, the vessel is restored, the vessel is functional, but it's changed by its experience. And it's really a beautiful metaphor for our own life journeys, where we are marked by life, and these seams of these gold seams are actually stronger than the original material, and have a beauty of their own. And so I find it a really beautiful process. I've taken one workshop in it, would really like a lot more training, because I think that it's something I'd really love to do with people, and around the idea of telling stories. And this was a piece for those when.
Oh, beautiful. So on video, you've got a piece of pottery that you have mended in this way. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's a little espresso cup that's looks like the bottom two-thirds of a human face. It's really a beautiful little piece made by a ceramicist in Montana, Adrian Arleo. And friends were staying with us and dropped this. And Rolly was just so distraught that he had broken this beautiful little piece of ceramic. And I said, oh, this is great. I get to repair this. And it's, I think it is even more beautiful repaired than it was in its original state.
Yeah, it kind of connects to what we were talking about before. How do you deal with loss, right? This is a constructive way to deal with loss. Yeah.
I would just, a person who was very important in my life was my great aunt Marie, who was born in the house. She was my grandfather's sister, born in the house where I was raised. She married and ranched on it, the North Fork of Chugwater Creek that went through our ranch. So she was about 10 miles away. But all she ever wanted to do her whole life was be outside working with horses and cattle and dogs. She never wore makeup. Her face was just deeply arroyoed by this life out of doors. And yet everyone who knew Marie just found her the most beautiful woman. I mean, people would say that all the time. She's just such a beautiful woman. And she was really marked by this life that she loved, and that she didn't try to avoid that, the tracings of her life's work. And it was a beautiful lesson to me.
Good lesson, yeah.
Model.
Well, we'll need to leave it there. We're out of time. We could spend another hour probably together with some interesting conversation, but it's been such a great pleasure talking with Teresa Jordan and Hal Cannon today. Thank you so much.
Good to be with you,
Thank
Tom.
you, Tom.
Thank
Lovely
you.
to see you.
Thank you.
Good day, everyone out there.
Yeah. Great day to everybody. You can find them at teresajordan.com and halcannon.com, and they're loving life in Portland, Oregon. Thanks again. Appreciate it.
Okay. See you
Bye
later,
bye.
Tom.
Thank you. And thanks, everyone, for listening to Access Utah.